to be quiet, remember? We make it to the truck, which is parked behind a dilapidated old barn that looks as though it's ready to collapse. Six releases Sam's hand, and he climbs into the middle of the cab. Six jumps behind the wheel, and I slide in next to Sam, with BK at my feet.
Holy crap, dude, what happened to your hair?
I goad Sam.
Shut up.
Six starts the truck, and I smile as she steers us onto the road, flicking on the headlights when the wheels touch the asphalt.
What?
Sam asks. I was just thinking that, out of the four of us, three are aliens, two are fugitives, with terrorist ties, and not a single one of us has a valid driver's license. Something tells me things might get interesting. Even Six can't help but smile at this. Chapter 4.
I was 13 when they caught up to us,
Six says when we cross into Tennessee, 15 minutes after leaving the Trucksville Motel behind. I'd asked her to tell us about how she and Katerina were captured.
We were in West Texas after fleeing Mexico because of a stupid mistake. We had both been completely entranced by some stupid internet post that Two had written, though we didn't know it was by Two at the time. And we responded. We were lonely in Mexico, living in some dusty town in the middle of nowhere, and we just had to know if it really was a member of the Guard.
I nod, knowing what she's talking about. Henri had also seen the blog post while we were in Colorado. I had been in a school spelling bee, and the scar had come while I was on stage. I'd been rushed to the hospital, and the doctor saw the first scar, and the fresh burn all the way to the bone of the second. When Henri arrived, they'd accused him of child abuse, which was the catalyst behind our fleeing the state and assuming new identities. Another new start. 9, now 8. Are the rest of you out there? I ask.
That's the one.
So you guys are the ones who responded, I say. Henri had taken screenshots of the post so I could see it. He had tried furiously to hack the computer to delete it before the damage could be done, but he hadn't been quick enough. Two was killed. Somebody else deleted the post right after. We'd assumed it was the Mogadorians.
Katerina did, simply writing, "We are here," and not a minute later the scar appeared.
Six says, shaking her head.
It was so stupid of Two to post that, knowing she was next. I still can't understand why she'd risk it.
Do you guys know where she was?
Sam asks. I look at Six. Do you? Henri thought it was England, but he couldn't say for sure.
No idea. All we knew was that if they'd gotten to her that quickly, it wouldn't take long for them to get to us.
But how do you even know she posted it?
Sam asks. Six glances at him.
What do you mean?
I don't know. You guys can't even say for sure where she was. So how do you know it was her?
Who else would it be?
Well, I mean, I watch the way you and John are so cautious. I can't imagine either of you doing something so stupid like that if you knew you were next. Especially with everything you know about the Mogadorians. I don't think you would have posted something to begin with.
True, Sam.
So maybe they had already captured Two and were trying to draw some of you guys out before they killed her. Which could explain why she was killed seconds after you responded. It could have been a bluff. Or maybe she knew what they were doing, and she killed herself to warn you guys away or something. Who knows? Those are just some guesses, right?
Right, I say. But they are good guesses. Ones I hadn't thought about. Ones
I wonder if Henri had.
We ride in silence, thinking about it. Six drives the speed limit, and a few cars cruise past us. The highway itself is lined with overhead lights that make the rolling hills beyond look spooky. She could have been scared and desperate, I say. That could have led her to do something stupid like write a careless post on the internet. Sam shrugs.
Just seems kind of unlikely to me.
But they could have already killed her, Sapon. And she could have become frantic. She must have been 12, maybe 13. Imagine being 13 and on your own, I say before I realize I'm describing Six's exact scenario.
She glances at me, then turns back to the road.
We never once thought it was a trick, she says. Though it kind of makes sense. Back then we were just scared and my ankle was on fire. Kind of hard to think straight when it feels as though your foot is being sawed off.
I nod my head gravely.
But even after the initial fear, we still didn't consider that angle. We replied, which is what put them on our tail. It was ridiculous for us to do. Maybe you're right, Sam. I can only hope we've grown a little wiser, those of us still left.
Her last sentence hangs in the air. There are only six of us left. Six of us against any number of them, and no way of knowing how we might possibly find one another. We're the only hope. Strength in numbers. The power of six. The thought makes my heart pump at twice its normal speed.
What?
Six asks. There are six of us left.
I know there are, so what?
Six of us, and maybe some of the others still have their sapons, maybe they don't. But six to fight, who knows how many Mogadorians? 1,000? 100,000? 1,000,000?
Hey, don't forget about me, Sam says. And Bernie Kosar.
I nod. Sorry, Sam, you're right. 8 of us. And then all of a sudden I remember something else. Six, do you know about the second ship that left Lorien?
A ship aside from ours?
Yeah, it left after ours. Or at least, I think it did. Loaded with Chimera. 15 or so, and 3 Sapon. And maybe a baby. I had visions of it when Henri and I were training, though he was skeptical. But so far, all my visions have proven true. I had no idea. It took off in an old rocket that kind of looked like a NASA shuttle. You know, powered by fuel that left a trail of smoke behind it.
Then it wouldn't have made it here, Six says.
Yeah, that's what Henri said.
Chimera? Sam asks. The same kind of animal as Bernie Kosar?
I nod. He perks up.
Maybe that's how Bernie made it here. Could you imagine if they all made it, after seeing what Bernie did during the fight?
It'd be amazing, I agree. But I'm pretty sure old Bernie here was on our ship. I run my hand down the length of Bernie Kosar's back, and can feel matted scabs still covering most of his body. Sam sighs, leans back in his seat with a look of relief on his face. Probably imagining an army of Chimera coming to our aid at the last minute to defeat the Mogadorians. Six looks into the rearview mirror, and the headlights from the car behind us illuminate a band of light across her face. She looks back to the road wearing the same introspective gaze that Henri always did when driving.
The Mogadorians?
She begins softly, swallowing as Sam and I turn our attention to her.
They caught up to us the day after we responded to Two's post, in a desolate town in West Texas. Katarina had driven 15 straight hours from Mexico, and it was getting late, and we were both exhausted because neither of us had slept. We stopped at a motel off the highway, not all that different from the one we just left. It was in a tiny town that looked like something out of an old Western movie, full of cowboys and ranchers. There were even hitching posts outside some of the buildings so that the people could tie up their horses. It was very weird. But we had just come from a dusty town in Mexico, so we didn't think twice about stopping.
She pauses as a car cruises past us. She follows it with her eyes and checks the speedometer before turning back to the road.
We went to get something to eat at a diner. About halfway through our meal, a man entered and took a seat. He was wearing a white shirt and tie, but it was a Western tie and his clothes looked outdated. We ignored him, even though I noticed the others in the diner staring at him, the same way they were staring at us. At one point he turned and gazed our way, but since everyone else had done the same, I didn't piece it together. I was only 13 then, and it was hard to think of anything at that point other than sleep and food. So we finished eating and went back to our room. Katerina jumped into the shower, and when she stepped out, wrapped in a robe, there was a knock at the door. We looked at each other. She asked who it was, and the man answered that he was the motel manager and had brought fresh towels and ice. And without thinking twice, I walked to the door and opened it.
"Oh, no," Sam says.
Six nods.
It was the man from the diner with the Western tie. He walked straight into the room and shut the door. I was wearing my pendant in plain view. He knew immediately who I was, and Katerina and I knew immediately who he was. In one fluid motion, he pulled a knife from the waistband of his trousers and swung for my head. He was fast, and I had no time to react. I had no legacies yet, no defenses. I was dead. But then the weirdest thing happened. As the knife dug into my skull, it was his skull that split open. I didn't feel a thing. I learned later they had no idea how the charm worked, that he couldn't kill me until numbers 1 through 5 were dead. He dropped to the ground and burst into ash.
"Wicked," Sam says.
"Wait," I interrupt. "From what I've seen, Mogadorians are pretty recognizable. Their skin is so white it looks bleached. And their teeth and eyes?" I trail off. "How could you not have known it in the diner? Why do you let him into the room?"
"I'm pretty sure only the scouts and soldiers look like that. They're the Mogadorians' version of the military. That's what Katerina said anyway. The rest of them look as much like normal humans as we do. The one who came into the diner looked like an accountant, wearing wire-rimmed glasses, black slacks, and a white short-sleeved dress shirt, and that tie. He even had a really dorky mustache. I remember him being tan. We had no idea they had followed us."
"That's reassuring," I say sarcastically. I replay the image of the knife plunging into Six's skull and killing the Mogadorian instead. If one of them tried the same thing with a knife on me right now, I would be killed. I push the thought away and ask, "Do you think they're still in paradise?" She says nothing for a minute, and when she finally speaks, I wish she had stayed silent instead.
"I think they might be."
"So, Sarah's in danger."
"Everyone's in danger, John. Every person we know in paradise, every person we don't know in paradise."
"All of paradise is probably under surveillance. And I know it's not safe to go within 50 miles of it. Or to call. Or even to send a letter. Or they'd learn the pull Sarah has on me. The connection we have."
"Anyway,"
Sam says, wanting to get back to the story.
The Mogadorian accountant falls to the floor and dies. Then what?
Katerina threw the chest to me and grabbed our suitcase, and we sprinted out of the motel room, Katerina still in her robe. The truck was unlocked, and we jumped inside. Another Moog came charging out from behind the motel. Kat was so flustered that she couldn't find the keys. She locked the doors, though, and the windows were rolled up. But the guy wasted no time at all, and punched straight through the passenger side glass and grabbed me by the shirt. Katerina screamed, and some men nearby jumped into action. Others poured out of the diner to see what was happening. The Mogadorian had no choice but to let go of me to face the men. "The keys are in the motel room," Katerina yelled. She looked at me with these big, huge, desperate eyes. She was panicking. We both were. I jumped out of the truck and sprinted back to our room for the keys. Those men in Texas? They were the only reason we got away then. They saved our lives. When I came out of the motel room with the keys, one of the Texans was aiming a gun at the Mogadorian. We have no idea what happened after that, because Katerina sped away and we didn't look back. We hid the chest a few weeks later, right before they caught up to us for good.
Don't they already have the chests from the first three? Sam asks.
I'm sure they do, but what use are they? The second we die, the chest unlocks itself and everything inside becomes useless, she says.
And I nod, knowing that much from past conversations with Henri. Not only are the objects worthless, I say, but they completely disintegrate the same way the Mogadorians do when they're killed.
Wicked, Sam says.
And then I remember the sticky note I found when saving Henri in Athens, Ohio. Those guys Henri visited, who ran the They Walk Among Us magazine.
Yeah?
They had this source who apparently caught a Mogadorian and tortured it for information, and he supposedly knew that number 7 was being trailed in Spain and that number 9 was somewhere in South America.
Six thinks about it a moment.
She bites her lip and glances in the rearview mirror.
I know for a fact that number 7 is a girl. I remember that much from the ride in the ship.
The second this leaves her mouth, a siren blares behind us.
Chapter 5. The snow stops on Saturday night. The scraping sound of shovels against asphalt fills the night air. From the window, I can see the faint silhouettes of residents throwing snow to less cumbersome places, readying themselves for the morning walk for Sunday obligations. There's a certain tranquility to the town at work on a quiet night, everyone bound by the same cause, and I wish I was out there among them. And then the bedtime bell tolls. In the room, 14 girls find their beds within the minute, and the lights are shut off. The second I close my eyes, the dream begins. I stand in a field of flowers on a warm summer day. To my right, in the distance, the outline of a jagged mountain range stands against the backdrop of the setting sun. To my left lies the sea. A girl, dressed in black, with raven hair and striking gray eyes, appears out of nowhere. She wears a smile, both fierce and confident. It's just the two of us. Then a great disturbance kicks up behind me, as though an isolated earthquake has just begun, and the ground is split open and torn apart. I don't turn to see what's actually happening. The girl lifts her hand, beckoning me to take it, her eyes locked on mine. I reach for it. My eyes open. Light streams in through the windows. While it feels as though minutes have passed, in reality, the whole night has gone by. I shake my head free of the dream. Sunday is the day of rest. Though ironically for us, it's the busiest day of the week, starting with a long mass. Ostensibly, the large